Dr. George Pinkerton, real four. So, the, as you've just described, the Germans were on the opposite side.
Yes, that's right, on the opposite side of the gorge. And they, our sort of first troops went up there, and our CO was wounded there in his brain carrier, and they managed to get him back. I never saw him, actually. They whipped him straight away. And they... and then we brought our mortars up and things and started shooting at the Germans, but they obviously weren't going to get over there at the time being. And unfortunately, there was a bit of a mix-up with the artillery barrage. It came down too late or something. And so we withdrew for the time being.
Right. How long did that barrage take? I mean, was this minutes or hours or...?
Oh, the whole thing was—it was a matter of half an hour or so late. It should have come down before our tank went up. I don't really know. There was nobody really quite knew what the muddle was there. And anyway, we withdrew rather smartly, and there was a German who was quite a long way away. He must have died laughing, I think, because the padre and I were rushing down the road, leaping in the air, dodging his bursts of fire. He wasn't very good, just as well, I shouldn't be here. Anyway, we settled down.
Where was he then?
He was on the other side of the padre and I.
No, the
other side of the gorge.
Oh, right. You and the padre were running along.
We decided to retire and retired. And the brigadier, everybody swore that the brigadier was standing there with his legs apart when a shell went between his legs. But I think that was probably apocryphal. That was it, and we had a bit of rest, and we had an awful lot of casualties. We had time, we sort of dealt with them, got them down the line.
Okay, tell me about those casualties and how you dealt with them. These were the first sort of under fire casualties.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, they were virtually all bullet wounds, and a certain amount of shrapnel, incorrectly called shrapnel. Funnily enough, it was in the papers again this morning. So, we sort of bandaged them up and gave them morphine and so on, and sent them down the ambulances down the line to the casualty clearing station.
Right. So, how many ambulances did you have?
Well, we used to get as many up as we could. You know, trouble was you could keep them out of sight a bit and then bring them up and deal with them at the time.
Padre, what was his name?
Padre? Gosh, oh dear, one of my oldest friends. It'll come in a minute.
It'll come in a moment, yeah. Did you work quite closely with him?
Oh yes, yes.
Did you see yourself as a sort of, I won't say doctor and social worker, but you know, as a team?
Yes, we used to get on to very well. There was some humorist. We used to, have a lot of chat about this and that, and some humorist quoted Omar Khayyam and said, "Myself as young did frequently frequent doctor and saint, and heard great argument about it and about, but evermore came out by that door in which I went." So we were known as doctor and saint.
Doctor and saint.
Yeah. Evermore came out by that same door as I went. Yeah. He was, Hill, his name was. Wilfred Hill. Splendid chap. Got on him.
What sort of a chap was he?
Oh, splendid chap. He was a Methodist.
Uh-huh.
The amusing thing was, he was a Methodist, and the other chap who used to share a tent with us was the quartermaster, Ambrose, who was a very rare bird, a major and quartermaster. And Wilfred Hill was a Methodist, and Ambrose had recently converted to Catholicism. And you can imagine these two. It wasn't a question of doctor and saint, it was saint and quartermaster. Eventually the The next wave went in, by which time the Germans had decided that they were going, and went. But we had a lot of casualties.
Really? How did you cope with suddenly having to, cope with real casualties on, in the field of fire, as it were?
I don't really know. I suppose one did it as a matter of course.
Right. What role did the Padre play? Was he in the...
He was always able to, there to give advice and confirmation. I don't really what he was doing there on that particular occasion. I don't know.
No. Normally would he go round the...
Oh, he'd go round the troops and it's just a general... I suppose what you call a social worker now. Most of his work. Yeah.
What do you think the troops thought of him?
Oh, they liked him enormously.
Did they?
He was a very nice man, and he was, there was no side about him. Some of them were a bit impossible, but he was a splendid gem.
Right. So after that, you'd had a.
So we then marched through, went in and. Went down in the gorge and up the other side and out into the open country of the other side. And there we were. What's the next place? We turn it off for a minute.
Yeah. So that was on the 13th of July.
Yeah, that's right. We pressed on a bit and then we got to... there was a place called Lentini and a place called Carlentini, which both the Germans were in, and that was the only time that we had some real artillery support. Old Pink Gin Freeman managed to get hold of a battleship, which dropped a few 18-inch shells into the German positions and rather upset them. And I don't think we had too much bother clearing up there. And then we... things went on a bit, and after a while, we finished up. But after several days, I know I had a. About this time, I acquired a motorcycle and sidecar, having done everything else on foot.
So, where did you acquire that from?
I don't know, found it by the wayside. It was a very nice motorcycle and sidecar. It was a German army one, a Zundapp. A very interesting machine. It had a motorcycle, the sidecar wheel was driven. And the first time I'd ever driven a motorcycle and sidecar, not quite the first, no, almost the first time. And I learned quite a lot about it. It was quite interesting.
You took yourself on that?
I took myself on it
and
all the equipment on it.
Yes. Passenger or?
Anybody wanted to come along.
Right.
But virtually until somebody found I'd got it and took it off me. The next thing was, because there was a very nasty battle going on a bit further on, nearer to Catania, a place called Primosole Bridge, which we weren't involved in. We were further inland, but we ended up on a pink place called the Simeto River, which is one of these rivers that wander vaguely through Sicily. And we dug in there, just being a bit vaguely shelled, but nothing very exciting. And I don't think we had any... The patrol would have contact with the enemy, but not a lot. But anyway, there we were on the Smeto River, and
what sort of terrain was that?
Flat. The Catania Plain, which is rather like Romney Marsh, that sort of thing. Flat, quite well, Fenland. It's very flat.
And you spent you were there some time.
We were there 2 or 3 days, sort of messing about. Although we did have a little bit of conflict a bit further inland. And there we were.
So the Germans were where? They would be.
The Germans were just about half a mile on the side of the river.
Uh-huh. And they were dug in.
And they were dug in.
Were they?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We had a. We did one big night attack there, which was a rather tiresome thing. I think we did quite well, really. But we had to show us the line of advance. We had a Bofors gun behind us firing tracer, and so about every half a minute he'd fire a tracer, would come over the head, and you knew his bearing, so you knew where you were. That was quite a nasty little battle there. And Hedley Verity, who was a very famous English cricketer and was a captain of the Green Howards, was fatally wounded there. Mm. Nice man.
Mm. Did you know him?
Yes, I did not well, but I met him on leave.
Right.
Yes, he was killed there.
So when an attack took place, or your troops were engaged, as it were, would you have already set up your aid post?
Well, we used to follow them as close behind as we could. Mm. We used to try and plot where we were going to go to, so that people would know where we were.
Mm.
And
so every time they stopped, you would set up an
aid post. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So you would stay there in readiness.
That's right.
Right. For the stretcher bearers to...
Yeah, yeah.
Did you go forward at all to see anybody, who'd been wounded or anything, or did you always wait in the aid post?
That's the rule, we had to wait in the aid post. Just occasionally you'd go forward, but not if you could help it.
Right, okay. Well, not if you could help it, but can you tell me about some occasions when you did in Sicily?
I don't know that I ever did much in Sicily.
Right. Save that for later.
And, then where did we go? Catania fell. Mm. We went to a strange place called Mr. Bianco, where we were in, I remember. Rather lovely name for a place. And Catania fell. And when Catania fell, we were switched to the coast to follow up towards Taormina. Taormina.
Right.
Up there.
Oh, right.
That was pleasant, because that bit of coast between Catania and Taormina is a beautiful piece of coast, lovely coast, lovely little Baroque towns along there, and I remember because the 78th Div were doing the on the left hand side, and they had a very nasty battle on the left hand side there, we were coming up the coast. We had a few little scraps between these gorges, but there were some strange moments there, because I remember we found a house which was right sort of in the middle with our artillery here shelling over their head and German artillery shelling our artillery over our heads. Well, we sat in this house here, and they were a very nice Sicilian family. They didn't seem to mind at all. They were very pleased to see us. And The daughter of the house was about 8 months pregnant. She was one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen. But she was about 8 months pregnant. But she was very, 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 very hospitable, and they gave us drinks and so on. All this was going on around them. Yeah. And then eventually the Germans, of course, withdrew, as they did. What they were doing was put up a scrap as they could and then go. Mm. When we got towards Taormina, the road, of course, round Taormina, used to run, nowadays it runs in tunnels, but it used to run on a ledge on the side of the cliff. And if you've been to the Imperial War Museum, there are two great guns outside. One of those was on the Roberts, which was used to shell the cliff above the road to bring the cliff down the road. So the Germans, I don't know how they got round, but they did get round. Mm. And eventually we arrived in... eventually arrived there, having been up Mount Etna most of the way. Mm.
tough was the going? I mean, it was quite hard physically.
Well, on the trip up Etna was very tough. Mm. And round the lava fields round Etna were very, very tough. Mm. Because, you know, you can't walk across a lava thing. You've got to keep scrambling up piles of lava and fall into one and cut yourself on another bit. It's horrible. So we did that. And as I say, we went up hoping to get round the Germans before we really got to this bit I've just been talking about. We went up the mountain a bit, intending to come down on the Germans on the road, but the divisional commander decided that they were going to go anyway, and that was it. So we didn't get the opportunity of coming down and dropping on top of them.
So you'd been in Sicily for a little while now, and you'd seen quite a lot, haven't you, and travelled quite a distance.
Yeah, walk from one end to the other. Mm. Yes, yes. And then, by this time, the Germans had gone, of course, and had made a very good retreat across the straits. Mm. So we were sitting in Sicily, and the Germans were sitting in just across the sea.
Yeah. So was there a sense, I mean, you knew when the Germans had been driven out? I mean, was there a sense of we'll stop there. So the Germans had been driven from Sicily.
Yes.
So yeah, sense of achievement.
Oh yes, yes. You know, we felt that at long last we got them going the right way.
Mm. Mm. So what did your commanding officer? I mean, did he have a word with everybody?
Oh yes, I think so. Yeah. Yes. Mm. And Monty sent his usual congratulatory letter to all the troops, as he always used to do.
Right, yes. What did you think of Monty?
Oh, well, I think everybody in the Mediterranean had a tremendously high opinion of him. Mm. I mean, he had come out there to work to unmitigated disaster, which that probably wasn't the fault of the generals themselves, but he hadn't looked back. Mm. And so we all had a very high esteem for him. Mm. Anyway, when we were sitting in Sicily, we had a few days to wait, and we sort of grouped and had a fairly quiet life, and I was had my mosquito net slung under a fig tree in just down the bottom of the hill at Naxos, and during the night I hear a little plop. I just put my hand out in the morning and there's a lovely warm fig for breakfast. anyway, we were the 15th Brigade, which we were attached to, were the follow-up brigade for the landing across the straits. And so we set off. The 17th Brigade did the landing and virtually, almost welcomed with open arms when they got there. Mm. And so when we then went across in landing craft, in decent size landing craft, we started off just after lunch. Mm. And it was a very, very civilised invasion, that one was.
Where did you land?
We landed at Reggio di Calabria. Uh-huh.
And what sort of coastline was that to land on?
We landed in the harbour, I think.
Right.
It was no problem at all.
Yeah.
There were one or two German aircraft who had a look at us as we came across the straits, and everybody on deck, we were all sitting on the deck of these landing craft, and everybody sort of got in and could fire at them. It was quite exciting, but They all decided that probably it wasn't a terribly good place to be.
Yeah.
And
What was your reception like by the Italians themselves?
Oh, very much. A lot of them just. There was one most helpful group of Italian soldiers who were helping chaps with their baggage, and another couple were giving out oranges. So they were really pleased to see us. They had in most of the places we'd come through Sicily, yeah. You know, we'd had a very considerable friendly reception.
Mm.
Anyway, we then sort of doing a two-pronged attack. I don't know who went up the coast, but we went over the bottom, the toe of Italy is very mountainous. We went over the toe, and the Canadians went up on the inside, up the sort of heel. It looked a nice little marge. But when you climbed about 1,000 feet, and you then came across, you walked about 100 yards, and you suddenly found there was a gorge, and about 500 feet down, about 50 yards across the bottom, and 500 feet up the other side. So we did this for a few, for most of the first day, really, and thoroughly worn out. We managed to find somewhere to lay our heads, and.
So it was really quite hard going.
It was very hard going, extremely hard going, the first part there.
How did the men stand up to this?
Oh, very well. I mean, they were
really?
Very, very fit.
Must have been.
They were all very fit.
Yeah. You must have been pretty fit by this time.
Well, I was pretty fit by that time, yes.
Mm.
Yeah. And anyway, we did this. And we had a nice old, quite an elderly chap, the I think it was Colonel Green. Anyway, he was the controller of Royal Artillery along with us, so that he could call down any or see what his guns could go, because they couldn't go anywhere there. Mm. And I believe we had about 9 radio sets, but not one single one of them was working in that mountainous country. So nobody knew where we were there. And funnily enough, the old quartermaster, who was bringing his supplies along, went a mile or two further inland and simply walked more or less straight ahead. But the trouble was, every village he got to wanted to surrender to him and have a little ceremony. So he took a long time to get there. That was really rather funny. Anyway, eventually we got through this lot and came down to earth, and then we were told we were to do a little amphibious operation. Mm-hmm. And we took to the boats again, and only about 10 miles up the coast came in again and took to our feet again, and then marched on from there. In the meantime, of course, the Fifth Army had done the landing at Salerno, and what we were trying to do was to join up with the Fifth Army. With very little opposition. They've blown bridges, of course, all the time, and mines and things like that, but not much in the way of shooting. Mm. But it was a long old slog.
Mm. Did you come across many other units of British Army or whatever?
Of
Army, you know.
Of the Fifth?
Yes.
Not at that time, because we were all Eighth Army at that time, you see.
Yes, yeah.
But we met up with the Fifth later, of course. Mm. In fact, we joined the Fifth later.
Mm.
We then marched up the Spanish coast, beautiful little places. I always remember a place called Belvedere, which was absolutely gorgeous, these little coastal villages, and Palme, and up the Sicilian coast. But I say the hard going was bridges blown down, and places you couldn't go because of mines and so on.
Mm. So where a bridge was blown, what would you do?
Well, either climb down and up again the other side, or wade, or I mean, you couldn't wait for someone. The engineers would all come up behind you and build them very quick. I mean, the Bailey Bridge was the thing that I think in many ways won the war.
Mm.
But they would come along behind. And then there we were, and we swung right inland there after, I remember, a very, very exhausting march on a very, very hot day, with no water. Anyway, we swung inland, and we went, then got back into the mountains again. It's really rather odd up in the mountains, because there were troops there of both sides, but you didn't really see much of each other, you know. You were probably only got a platoon here and a platoon there, and a platoon of the enemy there, but perhaps half a mile away.
Mm.
You just occasionally see each other, and somebody would take an odd pot shot and hope they'd hit something, but it seldom did. And so we went on through that part of Italy and continued to really go on through that part of Italy. We did see a certain amount of Fifth Army joined up Americans when they came in from the sea, but not a lot. And then we had a few days in the mountains there, and then by which time the weather was beginning to cool off a bit, and we got to a place called Isernia, I think, which was quite a bit further on, and I didn't feel at all well. And I got a temperature. I eventually found myself in hospital in Potenza.
Right. How did you come to get there?
Oh, by, as I say, we had moved across to the other side towards the Adriatic side. And so Potenza, wasn't very far away. It was a sort of our local hospital.
Right.
And I found myself in Potenza.
When you say you found yourself, had you passed out and been taken there?
No. I said, take me to the hospital. Take me to hospital. And I found, which I promptly felt a lot better. It was really rather funny, because I felt quite a different chap after the first day or so. Mm. And in fact, I had got in touch with the unit, and they had arranged to send a car to pick me up the next day.
What was wrong with you, do you think?
Hi?
What was wrong with you?
I'll tell you in a minute. And anyway, the day I was due to go, the night before I felt a bit rotten, and I went to spend a penny in the night, and I noticed that it was bright orange. And I thought, God, you've got jaundice. And by the next morning I could see my skin. So they thought I'd got malaria, and they kept sticking needles into me. So I'd got jaundice. And I spent a couple of days, I think, in Potenza, and then I was whisked down to Bari, the hospital in Bari. Mm-hmm. And I was, by the time I'd left Potenza, I was much better. And the treatment for jaundice in those days was to put people on a fat-free diet. When you think about it, quite illogical, but still, that was what it was. And on the train, on the hospital train going down to Bari, there were two or three of us who had jaundice in the compartment, and the orderlies came round with a plate of food, which we ate ravenously, and then about half an hour later the orderlies came round again and said, now, who are the fat-free foods? And we said, we are. We had another jolly good meal. It didn't do us any harm. Anyway, I spent about one night in Bari, and then they put me on. I got on an aeroplane and flew down to Catania again. And so I had only a few days in Catania, in hospital Catania, then I was sent to convalescence to Taormina, mm-hmm. which is how I first got to know Taormina. Because I'll tell you about that. Taormina, and funnily enough, the convalescent home was a big villa Isabella, I think, or something, or Isabelita, or something like that, down on the beach, which is now a very good restaurant. I've eaten there quite a few times. I had a week's convalescent in Taormina. Then I put me on an aeroplane to fly me back to my unit, to Bari. And as soon as we got over the mountains, you could see a huge column of smoke coming up the general direction of Bari.
I'll stop you there.